Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague Sadanan Dume of the American Enterprise Institute, writing his column at the Wall Street Journal about DEI in the Indo-Pacific. DEI in three major countries, looking at India, South Africa, and Malaysia. DEI outside the boundaries of the United States of America, a total fascination. Sadanan, a very good evening to you. Each, as you say, the details of affirmative action policies, DEI, in these three countries are entirely different. They all have the same outcome. So let's go to the outcome, and then we'll roll backwards. What is the outcome? What happens in each of these countries with vast different populations? Good evening to you.
Very good evening to you, John. Well, in a nutshell, DEI never works. Doesn't matter where you try it. It hasn't worked in India. It hasn't worked in Malaysia. It hasn't worked in South Africa. And we see a few things in common. One is that all of these countries have seen a massive brain drain, right? Some of their smartest, most hardworking, most driven people simply leave the country because they know that their skills and their hard work will not be rewarded. In fact, may even be punished. And so you see that if you go to Silicon Valley, you see, you know, people like Elon Musk, you see people like David Sachs or all these really talented South African tech entrepreneurs and engineers. And why are they not in South Africa? Well, guess what? It's because the DEI policies of South Africa would make it very, very difficult for them to succeed over there. Similarly, you see so many talented Indian engineers and tech entrepreneurs, people like Satya Nadella at Microsoft, Sundar Pichai at Google. And if you look at the Malaysian case, you know, in Malaysia, the Malaysian Chinese who are actively discriminated against by the Malaysian form of DEI, they've just been fleeing the country in droves. And you find them in London, you find them in California, you find them in Canada, you find them in Australia. And a lot of these people are very talented, very hardworking, well-educated people, and they've left the country because they're not going to get a fair shake. So that's one, sort of, you know, one universal problem. The other is that it creates resentment everywhere, because it creates a kind of dual resentment. On the one hand, there are people who feel that they could have gotten into a better school or they could have got a, you know, had a better career, but they were being discriminated against for no fault of their own, just because they were born into whatever group, right? So you have that set of resentments. And then you have the kind of quiet resentment of some of the people who are in fact beneficiaries, because the way they see it is that, well, you know, they're not entirely sure whether they've benefited. I'm sorry for that bark in the background. That's you know, it's just a corrosive thing on the whole.
I look at India, and it's amazing, these statistics. 4 in 10 federal government jobs and seats in funded universities are decided by open competition. What about the rest? How do they do it?
Well, that, you know, India is a particularly interesting case, right? Because it's the first, I think, major post-colonial nation to embark upon large-scale affirmative action. In India's case, it takes the form of caste quotas. And when it was started, as in many countries, when it was started, it was supposed to be a temporary remedy. And at that time, fewer than 1 in 5 places in government colleges or in government jobs was reserved for members of, you know, castes that had been seen to be oppressed in the past. Now that number is basically, the reservation number is up to 60%. In some states, it's even higher. It's more than 70% in some states. And it just never ends. It just goes on and on and on. And what you find is that in the beginning, it might start out as a kind of historical redress. But then a few decades later, it just becomes entrenched. And the groups that are seen to be benefiting don't want to let go of it. And so that's what ends up happening instead.
You've also written a column about a version of DEI in which fear of being accused of violating DEI made a major party make a decision that is unacceptable in retrospect. This is the longstanding story of the abuse of young women in England by a dominantly Pakistani group of men, many of whom have been jailed. There are court cases in all directions, recently revealed because Elon Musk made a deal of it about how Keir Starmer was the head of the Crown Prosecution during a lot of these decisions. I read that right before you wrote that, right before the column about DEI. So there's another problem that with DEI, protected groups or presumed protected groups become necessary to protect if you're going to maintain their votes, or that's the assumption of the Labour Party. It looks sinister. Is it? Was it meant on the Labour Party's place to be cynical, or were they just fearful of looking like bigots?
Well, you know, it's hard to say, right? I think a lot of these things actually come from people who are trying to do the right thing and who are well-meaning, right? So I don't necessarily second-guess their motives. I just think that, you know, they end up being a disaster. In the case of the British, what happened was, you know, this was the so-called grooming gang scandal, where there were literally thousands of young English girls, particularly in Northern England, who were basically, I mean, there's no nice way to say it, sexually abused by gangs of men of Pakistani origin. And the entire system failed these little girls, right? The cops looked the other way. Local elected politicians looked the other way. And the British elites were much more concerned with, you know, maintaining good relations between the various ethnic groups than they were with justice for these girls. And now, of course, the whole thing has blown up. It's become a big, you know, issue in British politics. But even now, you know, with the Labour Party in power, they are trying to pass a draconian new kind of definition of so-called Islamophobia. And what they're trying to do with that definition, in my view, is really to put any reasonable discussion about Islam or Islamic history out of bounds for all of us. So, for example, if you want to have, you know, a historical debate about whether Islam spread by force or not, I think people should be free to debate that. But the way the Brits seem to be going is that they want to put in place a definition that says you can't say anything that may be upsetting to a group of radical Muslims, which is really troubling, and it should be something that we're paying more attention to in the U.S. as well, because the Brits, as I point out in the column, the U.K. is, you know, a harbinger of how the West deals with these problems. And if things go wrong over there, you could be, you know, I worry that they could start, you know, the same bad ideas could come over here.
We have about a minute, and I want to concentrate on India, because Congress Party and state governments want to expand the program of quotas in India. Is there any debate going on in Modi's circle to end them entirely? Is that possible? We have about 30 seconds.
You can't do that, John, because now that, you know, Indian politics is just all has become about caste quotas to a large extent. So for any politician to now, after all these years, after more than seven decades, to get up and say, hey, you know what? This is a lousy idea. We don't think it's working out, would be a form of political suicide. And that's why I think what President Trump has done in the U.S. is really great, because he has helped the U.S. dodge a bullet.
Does Modi acknowledge this problem, or does he not speak of it?
He does not speak about it overtly. Some of the people around him may privately acknowledge that it's a problem.
Sadanand Dume, writing his column East is East for the Wall Street Journal editorial page. He is at the American Enterprise Institute. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.